Okay, let's get going on number three. That was quite a remarkable update from Russell Bentley from Ukraine, Free Ukraine, the Donbass Republic in the East. And watch that very carefully. Another update. Americans are now talking about, Americans in Washington, I won't call it our government, but they're talking about removing our diplomatic personnel from Ukraine as well. So the stage appears to be continually set, and we'll see. We will see. It has been 2 years since COVID was first confirmed in the U.S., whatever COVID is. And the pandemic, says MSNBC, no, this is CNBC, is worse than anyone imagined. Erica is with us again tonight, as always. Are you there? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, Jeff. Good evening.
Good evening. CNBC says the pandemic is worse than anyone imagined. Well, that's one of those truth and fiction things. I mean, it all started with one, according to Donald Trump, it was just one person coming in from China. We have it under control, said Trump. It's going to be just fine. He actually said that. So here we are, 2 years into this thing, this fraud, since that first confirmed case. The virus, the alleged virus, has torn through the U.S. with a ferocity and duration few anticipated. The human toll is staggering, says CNBC, with more than 860,000 people dead. That's a VAERS figure. And more than 69 million total infections. Let's go back to the 860,000 people said dead by VAERS. We know VAERS, self-admittedly, only gets 1% of the reports. So what do we multiply 860,000 admitted dead by? 99? How about just 10? Let's go 10.
Yep.
That's 8,600,000. I think that's certainly a possibility. And it could be far worse. And you say, well, how can you hide that many dead people in a country of 335 million? It's not hard at all when you own the media. You can hide anything you want. So 860,000 claimed dead from COVID. Let me say one other thing, then I want to flip it over to Erica here, that 2 years ago, we had between 50 and 60 million cases, this is normal, of influenza A and B, primarily. Last winter, instead of 50 to 60 million, we allegedly had only 2,300 cases, according to the CDC. Where did the 50 to 60 million cases of influenza go? They didn't go anywhere. They were right here. They just were relabeled COVID, and they were more than happy to put those flu victims in the hospital, give them remdesivir, and kill them for the money. It's still going on. Many of you listening have lost people that way, not only in this country, but wherever you are listening around the world. I've lost people I know. Erica's lost people she's known. And it's the same format. Get somebody in the hospital. They sign away medical rights to the hospital. Do what you will to keep me healthy and help me heal. They give them remdesivir, they fill their lungs with fluid, they can't breathe, they then go to the ventilator, then they go out the back door to the morgue. That's organized murder. It's a holocaust. That's what's been going on here. This is not the virus. This is the treatment for usually influenza.
I agree. I mean, it's going on across the country and, you know, in many parts of the world, the same script. And they love to say it's the unvaccinated, but if you look at what's their definition of unvaccinated now, it's anybody that's not had their booster, essentially.
And the boosters, we think, were brought out to do what?
Oh, I just, you know, finish people off. I mean, these are now, admittedly, damaging people's immune system, crippling their immune systems.
Yep.
I mean, this is a very damning report that came out from the UK, I don't know, it was a week or two ago. Their week 42 COVID-19 vaccine surveillance report, where they admit outright that the vaccine has damaged people's immune systems.
How about destroyed?
Yeah, that I would say it's destroyed, yep. But they said that they will never be able to mount a normal immune response against any future variants of this particular virus, not to mention maybe any other virus, because they're so locked into this one response to the detriment of everything else.
Or any other normal disease at the human immunological...
It seems so.
...front? And I'm talking about cancer, talking
yep.
about any minor bacterial infection, you name it. When you
yep.
don't have an immune system, you don't have a chance. They're calling it now AIDS, AIDS, Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. But they're also calling it VAIDS because of the vax, which is where it came from. The vax killed the immune system. Very simple. That's what's going on. So, and I know a lot of you listening maybe are vaxxed. Does this mean you're going to die? I hope not. I don't know. You're going to have to take every step you can to try to cobble together some kind of probably a supplement-charged immune function supplements. There are some really good ones out there that interfere with viral replication of viral attachments and so forth. NAC is one of them. There are a number of them out there. Anything the government doesn't want you to have, just consider it's probably what you need more than anything.
I would agree, yeah.
We have a number of things to talk about tonight. Let me just go back a little bit, though. In the beginning, there were a number of people who did receive, apparently, saline. A placebo, because the big pharma people had to have people walking around saying, I got the shot, I'm fine. So Erica figured out early on that the boosters were being staged to catch those people who might have gotten lucky once and gotten a saline infection. Maybe they got lucky twice, but they're not going to get lucky thrice, because these boosters are designed clearly to do what may not have been with the first shot or two. That's the way it looks.
Oh, and that explains why they're pushing them so hard. I mean, it's hard. They clearly do not offer any protection against anything. In reality, they create a susceptibility now because of these variants that they don't protect from. If we can believe this Omicron variant, the vaccines offer little to no protection against it. So why would you get a booster that was just a repeat of what you had previously that won't protect against what's going around now to further decimate the immune system?
We've come up with a number of postulates that apply to this kill shot, this bioweapon, which obviously have nothing whatsoever to do with a vaccination. And one of them is that the immune system is taken down many different ways. There are a number of factors involved. The kingpin seems to be the spike protein, which Dr. Chetty said in South Africa. And I think his words to this date are still the most impressive. And I would also submit that unless you see a doctor, a media doctor, let's call them, stand up and say, this is not a vaccine, it is a bioweapon, don't take it, you will die. In all likelihood, don't buy into the lies. But I don't see them saying that. I just don't. I mean, I see them often indirectly saying, well, it's probably doing a lot of damage to the body. They don't say it's not a vaccine. It's a lie. And until a doctor will say that out loud, I don't think you should take them very seriously or put too much stock in what they say. They've got to be truthful
and
forthright.
I think the one exception that I can recall was the Richard Fleming. Dr. Richard Fleming he did very aptly point out the dangers of the spike protein. And that, you know, this is not a protein you want to be prompting your body to produce.
And when was the last time we heard from...
You certainly don't want it injected, and the last thing you want is if it's your own body to start manufacturing it and flooding your system with it.
For the rest of your life, which may not be very long, when is the last time we heard anything from Richard Fleming?
The last I recall was when they were analyzing the effects of the vax on blood.
That's
that was probably,
right.
I don't know, 2 months ago.
Right, right. All right, we've had some heroes, and one of those, of course, is the UK funeral director, John O'Looney, who doesn't work for a big corporation. He works for his own family's small mortuary. He came forward, as many of you know, and spoke great truths early on, and his credentials as a professional mortician were really extraordinary. And he, unfortunately, became sick. Some people have told him he was poisoned. My first response, and I'll probably live out the rest of my life thinking, he was intentionally infected with something that made him unable to breathe easily. He did go to the hospital. Many of you know the story. We're going to let him tell it now. He is out. He is on the mend. He says he's 90%. So this is the first video that he has made since he has, well, escaped the hospital, the death factory. It's the same in England as they are here. They kill people every damn day. Every day. Tell us anything else about John O'Looney we need to know, then we'll listen to a few minutes of his dissertation.
No, I think that's about it. You know, the good thing is he's out, he's recovering. He's still committed, he's just, you know, extremely busy, and as we know. But no, it's very, very heartening to see that he's recovered and can speak from you know, for his own experience as to what had happened in the hospital firsthand.
Which was a little weird, as you'll hear. Apparently that Harvard visit was real.
Or Oxford.
I beg your pardon?
Oxford University.
Yes, gotcha, Oxford. All right, well, let's listen to what John says. Now, most of you know his voice. If you haven't seen him, you'll know right away who you're listening to. He is asking people to please not contact him. He is overwhelmed. He is back to work in his family business and trying to recover that last 10% that he is still not quite caught up with. So here's John O'Looney from the UK. First real interesting statement that I've heard in a long time. The only one from John directly. So here it is.
So hi guys, John here with just a quick update. Following hundreds and hundreds of requests as to how I am. The date today, excuse me, is the 19th of January 2022. And this is basically me just giving you an update to tell you the truth about what happened recently about me and falling ill and my hospital stay, etc., etc. So the week before Christmas, I felt unwell, had a cold, got progressively worse, had brain fog, taste and smell went a little bit, and felt really unwell, before then becoming short of breath. Now I've got one of the little things that you put on the end of your finger for your sats to check your oxygen saturation, and it went down as low as 78, which obviously isn't a sign of great health, and action was needed. So I was liaising with a couple of GPs who I'm very fortunate to have the support of, and one of them took note of these sats and called an ambulance, because obviously we don't possess access to oxygen, and oxygen was needed, you know, when your sats are going as low as 78%, you know, it's not great. So the bottom line is went to hospital. Now the ambulance crew came and transferred me to hospital. There were the staff on this ambulance consisted of two guys, two great big guys who were really nice, really friendly, really helpful, cannot fault them, and a lady who was not quite so nice. She insisted on berating me for me choosing not to have a vaccine, said I was extremely selfish, etc., etc. I kind of tried to explain in between breathlessness and the reasons why, the fact I was a funeral director and I'd seen an unnatural death rate in recipients. But she insisted I was selfish and then berated me for taking medication to try and get well prior to them being called.
The woman should be fired, should have been fired immediately on the spot, of course. You don't abuse someone who is seriously ill if you pretend to be a professional health provider. This is just despicable. And I'm sure it's happening here too, Erica. People are mocking patients. We've heard it. I know a friend of mine was mocked. He's dead now. They successfully killed him off.
Yeah, and apparently if you end up in the hospital and you're adamant about not taking the remdesivir, they begin to neglect you.
Tell us more. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's I've heard that in a few places now. That yes, if you go into the hospital needing help and you're aware that remdesivir is not something that you want and you want something else, they almost will not attend to you.
Incredible.
So you've got to really go in there either with a very vocal advocate,
right,
that can advocate on your behalf or really,
right,
know what you're talking about and be willing to stand your ground. And they will take advantage of you.
Please look on the right side of the homepage. There are federal documents which show that remdesivir and ivermectin are perfectly legal for all hospitals and medical facilities to prescribe for patients. You should print that out. Keep it handy. You never know when you might get sick. Now, as far as John getting sick, you may call me conspiratorial. I don't care. I've been called a lot worse. I know for a fact that people are killed all the time. There are many advanced technologies. They can put something on your car door handle. They can put it on your steering wheel, on your front doorknob. They can do anything. And you can get sick with whatever they want you to get sick with. I know David Dees, my very close friend for years, was murdered. They gave him cancer, and he died. And it was particularly aggressive and utterly non-responsive. And when you go in for radiotherapy, where they're going to blast the tumors in your spine like they did to David with radiation, and after 10 treatments, nothing happens, which is precisely what the nurse told me when I called the radiology department, we don't understand it. We gave him 10 doses. The tumors have only grown. Never seen this before. So, yes, they have hybrid forms of cancer. Yes, they have all manner of diseases they can give people if they want them to die. And that's what happened. David Dees was murdered. One of the last things he said to me was, and we knew this, we'd already talked about it, he said, they gave it to me. And I said, I know, David, I know. So I think they actually poisoned John. I think they made him sick. That's my opinion. I'm not speaking for Erica at all. It's too easy to do, and they needed him out of the way. And as you know, if you listen to the recording we played last week by one of the people who was involved in getting him out of there, they had two armed security guards outside of John O'Looney's hospital room. Now, who else
That's
gets
curious.
That kind of treatment? All right, let's go back to the video.
Of doxycycline, which is an antibiotic for chest infection, and some steroids. She wasn't a nice lady, to be honest with you, and I'd question why someone would feel the need to berate a patient who's struggling for breath. And, you know, what is the mindset there? It certainly doesn't seem like it's one of care. Anyway, I was transferred to the hospital, and I would hasten to add the two guys that were on the ambulance were wonderful. So thank you to those two guys. So I was transferred to hospital, went into the triage unit, if you will. The staff nurse there was lovely, took three COVID tests, lateral flow tests, they came back negative, and I was laying there, and she relayed the test result from the machine. So this kind of confused me, because I was convinced I probably did have COVID, you know.
All right, that opens the door. I'm sorry for the interruption. That opens the door quite widely to what test did they give him. There are two tests that they can use now, right?
Right.
PCR and the rapid antigen test. PCR is utterly worthless unless they crank up the cycles, and then they can find anything they want and call anybody sick with COVID. And then the rapid test is virtually worthless. I keep hearing this from professionals in the field. So they tested him three times. He's negative. What are they going to do? Let's find out.
To run that evening, I was then transferred to Ward 22, Room 1. There was a couple of other guys in there who clearly... I suspect were COVID patients. They were on the high pressure masks, pushing oxygen in them, and looked unwell, and certainly spent most of the night coughing and choking, and they were administered morphine, which I kind of wondered if that was healthy for people that couldn't breathe. But hey ho.
No, it's not healthy. And furthermore, Erica, why, if John O'Leary tested negative three times, would they put him in with two people who are gravely ill and coughing and hacking all over the place, unless they wanted him to get sicker?
Struggling to breathe. So was it a COVID ward? Were they hoping that he would contract it or whatever it is?
Whatever it is, I don't know.
Different protocols, aren't we? You know, that was obviously early hours of the morning. The following morning, I received a visit from a consultant. He was a gentleman, and he introduced himself, then insisted that it was time to start me on a course of remdesivir, which I declined. He kind of it got his back up a little bit, you know, because he didn't expect to be challenged. I kind of said to him, you know, on what clinical basis is remdesivir needed? Why would it help me, kind of thing? Remdesivir, you know, check with your doctor or nurse if the following side effects occur while taking remdesivir. Chest tightness, cough, difficulty swallowing, fast heartbeat, nausea and vomiting, trouble breathing. These are recognized side effects from remdesivir, so I kind of questioned him as to why he thought that was an appropriate treatment for a suspected COVID case whose main symptom is struggling to breathe. Remdesivir, R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R. Google it yourself. The side effects are there. What clinical basis is there to give someone who can't breathe something that's going to make... potentially that breathing even worse? There you go. So he stomped away from the bed, and I never saw him again. Later that day in the afternoon, I had a representative from Oxford University, a young lady, mid-30s, who introduced herself as an Oxford University representative and asked me if I would consider taking more experimental drugs. One called tocilizumab, T-O-C-I-L-I-Z-U-M-A-B, and baricitinib, B-A-R-I-C-I-T-I-N-I-B. And I kind of said, she said, well, here's the paperwork, and she said it would help you, and you may die if you don't have it. And I was told I would die if I didn't have remdesivir as well by the consultant. Lo and behold, I'm still here. It's a miracle. So tocilizumab is actually used for rheumatoid arthritis. The doctor may not prescribe it if you have certain heart problems, liver disease, or blood tests that suggest the drug may affect your liver. You've had cancer, or you've got infections, or you've had severe infections. So, you know, it's for rheumatoid arthritis. There are a number of potential side effects with it. Decided I didn't actually want that. Told her I didn't actually want that. The next one was one called baricitinib. Now, There are a number, baricitinib is not recognized if you're pregnant, planning to become pregnant or breastfeeding. Well, I've got a big belly, but I'm not pregnant. And your doctor may not prescribe baricitinib if you've had or have any of the following: an active infection, that's COVID, repeated or serious previous infections when I'm hospitalized for an infection that's suspected COVID, disease of the lungs, liver or kidneys, that's COVID, is like the lungs things, heart problems, high blood pressure, my blood pressure was up because I couldn't breathe, blood clots, deep vein thrombosis or pulmonary embolism. So these are complications, side effects conducive with baricitinib. Deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism, they all go hand in hand with COVID. Why would you give or suggest giving baricitinib to a COVID patient? So I declined.
Erica, what does it sound like to you? First the guy comes in and says, you're going to die unless you take remdesivir. And then this woman from Oxford comes in and suggests two drugs that are clearly contraindicated for anyone in his condition. What do you think? What do you think's going on?
Oh, it's a mild form of coercion. I mean, he's in a debilitated state, and they're trying to convince him that he should try these highly toxic, possibly lethal experimental therapies.
All right. Forgive the interruptions. I'm just trying to make a point for any of you out there who do get sick with the flu and end up in the hospital. If you get the flu, which is in most cases what you're probably going to get, because 60 million cases of flu don't disappear, don't go to the hospital, is my personal advice to anyone.
Yeah, I mean, they are still not doing differential diagnoses, which means they're only looking for COVID. So you may have something entirely different that needs a different treatment, but you're not going to get it because they're not looking for it.
They're not testing for flu.
No.
This is ridiculous. It's so patently obvious what's going on. Remember,
these are two of many different respiratory viruses that could be out there.
Yes.
There's bacterial
many
illnesses that these could be attributed to.
Yes. It's grim. They knew who was in the hospital. They knew what they had. They had one of the biggest voices for freedom, medical freedom, and intelligence in the hospital. They had him. So they tried the remdesivir. He was too smart. The woman comes in to offer him two more things that probably would have killed him, either one of them, had they given to him. Been given. It's
mm-hmm.
crazy. All right, here we go.
She said, well, you know, I'll come back tomorrow and see how you feel. You realize you could die and this, that, and that. Do you know what? I'll take my chance. And she did, indeed. There was no visit from the clinician, but there was a visit from the Oxford University rep trying to encourage me to take baricitinib and tocilizumab. I personally just didn't feel, after doing my research, these were things that were going to benefit me. In fact, I felt that they could potentially harm me. You know, I'm struggling to breathe. Why would I want things that it tells me do not take if you've got diseases of the lungs, liver or kidneys, or problems breathing? It's not rocket science, is it? So I declined. And I then felt, you know, I was being given intravenous antibiotics and intravenous steroids to lessen the inflammation. I'd recovered a little bit and felt that, you know, it was time for me to go home, because I was kind of being encouraged to consider having the CPAP mask to push air into me. And again, I felt that this would do me more harm than good, and it's time to leave. So I made touch base with a couple of friends, GP friends, who agreed to advocate for me. And moves were made for me to discharge myself from the hospital, which I did. Now, that was a fun process in itself. Two security guards were called, and I was told I would be, they would call the police and I would be arrested as a health hazard. if I attempted to leave. I had numerous people tell me I would die within minutes if I left the ward due to lack of oxygen because I was on oxygen. They made it very difficult to leave, is the bottom line, and we were debating and disputing for at least a couple of hours whilst that I continued to make it clear that I wanted to leave the hospital. Now, I would hasten to add that the vast majority of the staff in the hospital were wonderful. They clearly do care very much, but there is there are issues there where I felt I needed to leave. It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one. You kind of make your decision. They all tell you you're going to die if you leave, and it makes it very difficult to leave. They told my wife I was going to die if I left, and I've got a recording of that phone conversation. Lo and behold, I'm still here. You know, hospital is not a prison. It's a place that you go if you're unwell. And they treat you, and when you feel you're ready to go home, you can discharge yourself. And that's what I decided to do, and that's what I did. And so there was nothing they could do that could prevent that. You know, I was unwell. I recovered suitably enough to go home. That's what I decided to do. That's what I was going to do. I'm within my rights to do that, as is anyone else. So Mark Sexton came with a GP who was my advocate, who will remain nameless, but who I'm, you know, eternally grateful for. They took me home, and lo and behold, I could survive without oxygen, you know, and have survived. And I've gone home, and they've prescribed and treated me at home, and I've recovered. And I've recovered pretty well, to be honest with you. I've probably got, I'm about 90%. I feel that last 10% is creeping up, and it is one of those things where you kind of take a two steps forward and a step back some days, but the recovery process is ongoing. I'm back at work, I'm looking after families, and that is it, really. That is it. I did feel very ill. Was it COVID? I really don't know. The six tests, my wife had three, I had three, they all came back negative, but I did have the symptoms that kind of would have been COVID-related. Some people have said pneumonia. I don't know. I don't think my wife could have had it as well, but I wasn't very well. And as I've said all along, there is a virus. There's a virus every year, and it is particularly nasty. What I will say is, with this virus, it didn't feel natural. I felt so ill, it actually felt like I'd been poisoned. To be honest with you, it's been suggested by a couple of people that I may have been poisoned. I don't know. You know, conspiracy. I know I felt very unwell, but now I am recovering.
Okay, there we go. That's the story from John O'Looney. He feels much better now, and I personally have no doubt that this man was made sick. I'd say it's a 90% chance he was made sick. You heard what he said. But that's, again, I'm speaking for myself. I've had too many experiences with people who have become strangely ill. And in David D's case, he died. They killed him. I know they did. He knew it.
So, well, regardless, this whole experience gives John O'Looney's message even greater strength and veracity as
Correct.
To what's going on in these hospitals. This whole agenda to force these toxic drugs onto people and kill them if that's the outcome.
Just incredible when you think about it, how satanically evil this world has become, and the healthcare industry, staffed by many seriously good people, we know that, but run by people who are in the business of death and money. It's all about greed.
Mm-hmm.
There's never too much. There's never too much for these people. I don't know what the average COVID fatality in a hospital will generate. I'm sure it's at least a quarter million, maybe 350,000, 400,000. I don't know. It's way the hell up there. Just the remdesivir alone is $8,000 a day. You give that for a week to get somebody good and sick so they go on a ventilator, that's $56,000 right there, right just for that one drug. So it's money. Money.
Well, it's amazing, though, to see the lack of compassion. You know, when he described the experience in the ambulance, that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's happened to these people? You know, that's got. Yeah,
exactly.
They went into this field to help other people, and yet
right.
They seem to be completely bereft of any compassion.
I just don't even begin to think anyone should go. Now, remember. If you have an oxygen level 80, 85, his was below 80. And he made it. He made it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the body is a little tougher. Some people go in there with a low 90 or an 88, and that hospital trying to, you got to come in, you got to check in, get yourself in here, we need to get you, I've got to get you that oxygen. I'm sorry. Don't do it. Don't believe it. Make your own decision.
The fact that they're not really accurately defining what it is that's causing this is a concern. I mean, is it a blood issue? Is it the hemoglobin, the low hemoglobin? Or is it a respiratory issue? Is it something in the lungs? What is it? You want to make sure you get the appropriate treatment and not this cookie-cutter, you know, script that they've got going on that ends most people up in the morgue.
850,000 admitted last year. Admitted. And what's the real number here in the U.S.? Millions and millions. Easy to cover up. Okay, so there's John O'Looney. He still remains a problem for the establishment. We do know that England has allegedly given up on their passport ideas and all the other things, and they have deregulated their entire COVID narrative. That's in England, but that's not in other countries in Europe. Austria is back in the Middle Ages. It's just terrible protocols and procedures there. So it's not over yet. There are games being played here, and we don't know the answers. We can watch the results, we can watch the implementation, but we don't know the answers yet. Time will tell. Okay.
Indeed.
What do you want to do next? Read a couple cases? What do you want to...
Well, I'll chime in here with some potentials, maybe, of what could be going on with
sure.
this drop, sudden drop in the narrative. On our last program, we mentioned the fact that some lawsuits had been filed in the UK that may have precipitated this turnaround. I don't know. Maybe it's just run its course. But we could conjecture that possibly they're going to take the foot off their gas right now for a little bit, because the genetic damage that has happened as a result of these injections gives them some rationale or justification for trying out more of their nanotechnologies and genetic therapies, and in particular CRISPR. They've been chomping at the bit to try to use this in humans to see or explore its potential. And now, conceivably, they have a large population to pull from that may be candidates to test this technology. So we'll see.
Describe CRISPR for us and how it might
be
employed.
Okay, CRISPR is a gene editing technology. So if you've got some sort of genetic issue that's, you know, adversely affecting your physiology or metabolism, it's possible to target the gene that's causing the problem and go in there and cut it out or, you know, delete it or edit it in some fashion, replace it with something else, to try to remedy the problem.
Erica, how does this work? Is it system-wide, every cell where these genes may occur? How does it work?
Well, this is part of the problem. You have to know the gene in question, and then you can target that gene. And there's a few ways to do that. But the downside of CRISPR is that it sometimes has off-target effects. But when it works, you know, it could be a remedy. Again, it's a situation where, you know, you have to, I would think, have exhausted all other possibilities for some sort of a, I don't want to call it a cure, but you know, a treatment, because there are risks involved. I think just last year they did, there was one human patient in a trial that it seemed to work successfully, but you know, again, it's a waiting game. Time will tell. But my guess is that this is a rationale they need to bring this CRISPR technology into the human population and start experimenting.
Well, they'd, I'm sure, love the opportunity. All right, Omicron. A lot of people allegedly are getting this alleged variant. The universal baseline complaint that I'm hearing is debilitating fatigue, terrible fatigue. They just can't hardly make it to the car. I had it. I had this myself. When was it? A year and a half ago? More. Something like that. I was just exhausted for days. 5-6 days? Then I got over it. Fine. That's all I had. But the same thing is going on now.
I guess, the hallmark feature of this so-called variant. It's the debilitating fatigue, along with headaches, and some body aches. I have heard a case of burning feet, and then the eyes, the eyes, like a burning or a blowing sensation on the eyes. And night sweats was another thing.
Right.
I mean, they say it multiplies 70 times faster than the Delta variant.
They say. And who do we trust?
Yeah, I mean, all of this is just on hearsay. I have my suspicions. I mean, they want us to believe that this thing emerged in South Africa back in late last year, maybe September, but it was first reported in November, and may have or is assumed to have originated in somebody with HIV with some immune suppression, and this thing just, you know, was not controlled and got loose. And then suddenly, in a little over 30 days, beginning of January, it turns up in 135 countries.
Golly gee. Here's one from South Africa. mRNA booster shots don't block Omicron, says a South African study. Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah, it's useless.
A preprint in China says that Omicron came from mice. So
that's a good one. Well, I mean, it is, if we believe that, you know, what they say the Omicron is this variant of the original SARS-CoV-2 virus that has 60 mutations, 30 of which are in the spike protein alone, 3 in the furin cleavage site. I mean, there's just too many mutations to think that it just evolved from the Delta. There's just no logical progression there. So now they're saying that those are a few possibilities. Number one, it originated in an isolated group of people. Well, where would those be? And then it spread to 135 countries? No, I don't think so. It came from an animal reservoir. That's about as plausible as the bat soup in the Wuhan wet market. Or it was engineered, possibly in a laboratory and then released. And the other possibility, and I think is the most likely one, if we want to believe anything, is that it's arising within the vaxxed from the original variant because they've got no immune system. And now they're vaccinated against one strain, and you put this selective pressure on the virus, and it's going to mutate to something that escapes the antibodies that were generated from the vaccine.
What we're going to see in the next year, two or three, is VAIDS, vaccine-induced AIDS. That's the best call. And it will not have anything to do with HIV, so don't buy an HIV home test do-it-yourself kit. Just understand you've got an immune system. If you've been vaxxed, or if you've been routinely exposed to people who have been vaxxed. And I say that because we do believe there is a threshold of spike that people can tolerate before they begin to manifest spike symptoms. Now, if you continue to expose yourself to people who are shedding this virus, not a protein, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, here's another aspect to this. Last week, they announced the first pig heart in full, in totality, was transferred to a human being. They had genetically altered the pig heart so it did not throw off the material that causes your body to reject it. Now they've done the same thing with pig kidneys. They've transplanted pig kidneys into human beings, just announced today. So first heart, then kidneys. Don't be surprised if livers are next. They may have engineered pigs to go into a big business of replacement organs for people. So there's another one for you. All right.
Yeah, there's going to be money from this. A lot of money.
Pig. Oh, endless. Now we've got another stillborn case. You want to go ahead and read this one?
Let me see if I get it in front of me. Yeah.
I've got it here if you don't. Go ahead.
I'm searching here.
It's very short.
Got it. No, I don't have it. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, all right. This happened to me. I came into contact with three healthcare workers. Now, this woman was not vaxxed. This happened to me. I came into contact with three healthcare workers who recently had gotten the shot. I was pregnant, 15 weeks. Everything was normal, super healthy. This was my fourth baby. I got extremely ill the next day. I went in for the next ultrasound and found a perfectly healthy baby was dead. My body refused to recognize this. I had to have the baby surgically removed after 3 weeks, waiting for my body to naturally recognize its death. My doctor ran some pathology, and there was no chromosome issue, nothing wrong with the baby. The baby had had a heart attack in utero, a perfectly healthy baby, but was utterly defenseless against whatever the thing is that is spreading. So she was exposed to three workers who were shot up, and obviously they transmitted to her spike protein, at the very least. There may be many other things we don't know.
Yeah, that's horrific. And I am aware of other women in which this has happened. They were very far along in their pregnancies, actually. And this was 15 weeks, so about, what, 3-4 months?
Right.
But what's happening is, presumably, the spike protein is causing clots in the placenta and, you know, restricting the blood flow. Obviously, in this case, maybe the spike actually did go through the placenta and get into the fetus. I mean, another thing that's happening is something in pregnant women, anyway, something's happening called intrauterine growth restriction, where the fetus is not getting enough blood flow from the mother, so they're being born either prematurely or just underdeveloped. It's not a normal pregnancy.
Are you seeing in your research any indication that people who are severely injured, and I'm not talking about side effects, these are injuries. These people are being severely injured. Are you seeing anything about these people actually recovering? Is there any trend?
No. It's maybe a little bit, but the trend is no. They're not overcoming whatever damage has been done.
So the severe adverse reactions, no. Injuries are permanent and they get worse. That's about it?
Yeah, and oftentimes if one thing resolves, something else worse takes its place.
Not good.
No.
It's going to be a long year. Long year. Thanks, Erica.
Okay, my pleasure, Jeff.
Okay. Talk soon.
All right. Have a good evening.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for being here. We'll be back in 21 hours plus 2 days. It is a weekend. So try to enjoy it and get out and get... I went to a Costco and I didn't see anybody stocking up on anything. They had just-in-time shopping in their carts. And those are big carts. And they had all kinds of food that you should be buying and putting away. So, for goodness sakes, don't delay. You've still got time. I don't know how this could be, but you still do. So do some preparation. Have a great weekend. Take care.